Look around. What do you see? Cars. Lots of them. And guess what? They're probably on Auto Trader. Whether you're into timeless classics or the latest trends, did somebody say solar-powered, eco-friendly, vegan, leather-wrapped, aromatherapy-scented, disco ball-equipped, self-driving car? If you see it on the road, you can likely find it on Auto Trader. Big cars, small cars, blue cars, new cars, used cars, electric cars, and one day, maybe even flying cars. With millions of options to choose from, buying a car becomes a whole lot easier. See it, find it, Auto Trader.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, stuff you should know. Come and see us in Orlando or New Orleans, because that's your last chance.
Yep, Orlando, we're going to be at the Plaza Live October 9th. New Orleans, we're going to be at the Civic Theater October 10th. Just go to sysklive.com and you will find info and links to buy tickets, and then you can come see us because they won't let you in the door without them. I'm sorry.
That's right.
And if you want to come see me, I will be in Chicago at Lincoln Hall on September 12th, and I will be in Austin, Texas at the North Door on October 2nd. Ticket links are weirdly hard to find, so just look up End of the World Josh Clark Austin or Chicago, and you will find what you're looking for. See you guys soon.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. There's first-time guest producer Dave.
Dave.
Yeah.
Back with us.
He picked it up already that he already knows not to say anything in response. I love that in a guest producer, don't you?
So Dave's story. Dave worked with us many, many years ago and went away. I don't even know what Dave did in the meantime.
He went to Alaska, I think.
He wandered the desert.
Mm-hmm. Then the desert of Alaska.
He wandered back in one day and said, "Hey, I hear you guys invented podcasting.
Right.
Can I get a job?"
Yeah. And here he is now.
Yeah, it's good to have him back.
You may have noticed a distinct uptick in the quality of our short stuffs. That's because Dave took over editing those things.
Yeah, Jerry was like, "This isn't even worth my time."
Snooze, yawn.
Yeah, Jerry's been handing off duties, huh?
Left and right, like she's dealing a hand of cards.
You know, the final straw one day is she's going to just look at us both. This is how she's going to quit and do the move when the dealer leaves the table.
Yep.
The little hand move.
Yep. I'm out. I'm out. I hate you both so much.
That's how she's going to break it to us.
Yep.
And then a new person with a cummerbund on will just wander in.
Yeah.
And an arm garter.
Right?
Because we go to casinos in the 19th century.
Right, a portly fellow with a mustache.
That's right.
His hair waxed.
That'd be great.
Would be great. Can't you see Jerry dreaming about doing that? Like just kind of twitching in her sleep with a big smile on her face?
You and I dream about Stuff You Should Know going on forever, and she dreams about its ultimate demise.
Right. So, Chuck, let me ask you. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had nacho cheese Doritos?
Is that the original Dorito?
I don't know. I think it's possible taco flavor is the original, but for you and me as children of the 70s, 80s, I would say nacho cheese is the first one we probably ever ate, the red bag.
Sure. I'm a Cool Ranch guy.
I like it too. Actually, I like all Doritos. I don't really discriminate. So you have had nacho cheese Doritos?
Yes.
Have you ever had soy sauce?
Oh, I'm a big soy guy. I do not follow the sushi what they say, how to eat sushi, I drown it.
Do you? I still use soy sauce, even though every time I, there's a weird little voice in my head that's like, you're not supposed to do that.
That voice is probably Yumi sitting next to you.
I say, no, it's really not, because she uses a little bit too, but I don't know what it is. It's not male, it's not female, it's just some weird disembodied voice. And I say, to heck with you voice, I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah.
What about Maggi sauce? Have you ever had that?
Ooh, I don't think so.
Oh, I'll bet you have somewhere. It's a kind of like a tall, slender brown bottle with a yellow label. Maggi, M-A-G-G-I.
I think I can picture it.
Okay. I'll bet you've had it. Anyway, if you've had all three of those or any one of those, what about Vegemite?
Oh, God, no.
Okay. I've had Vegemite. I'm not crazy for it, but we're not here to yuck anyone's yum, right?
Well, I'm going to throw one in because I see what you're doing now.
Okay.
Can I throw one in there?
Sure.
Have you ever used Accent? That is A-C, a little Accent au goût, I believe.
Sure.
C-E-N-T, that spice.
I don't know if I have. I know exactly what it is because I'm just so familiar with grocery stores, but I don't know if I've ever had it.
You're so familiar with grocery stores.
So familiar.
It's one of your talents.
I've got another one for you. You know Japanese mayonnaise, the Kewpie doll mayonnaise?
I have had that.
Okay.
We could do this all day.
What about oysters? You ever had oysters?
I love oysters.
Okay. Well, Chuck, listen. You have had MSG, monosodium glutamate, if you've eaten any one or all of those things.
That's right.
I love monosodium glutamate, also known as MSG, and the world does too. The world just doesn't know it because MSG, those three little words, those three little letters, have such a bad reputation,
yeah.
Especially in the West, especially in America, that food manufacturers have come to basically bend over backwards to create new processes for creating MSG so that they can insert them into foods without having to say that there's MSG in the food, even though there's very much MSG in the food, but they know that a lot of Americans won't eat that food if they see that there's MSG in there.
That's right, and we will get to this in more detail, but it was such a bad thing at one point,
mm-hmm.
especially in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Like, I remember growing up and people talking about MSG in Chinese restaurants. And the whole time they were talking smack about Chinese restaurants, a lot of American families were just dumping that stuff all over their food via that little Accent spice bottle.
Yeah, Accent, any kind of processed food that has any sort of salty or savory kind of flavor to it. Like, it's everywhere. It's in grape juice. It appears everywhere, naturally and added.
Because grape juice, what you want is a meaty, salty aftertaste.
Right. You're swishing the grape juice around your mouth. You're like, yeah, it's got a real oystery quality to it. Oh, I love it.
Are they natural in oysters? Is that the deal?
Yeah, oysters,
are
clams.
They
MSG?
Yeah, I'm calling them a they, like the little trio of...
Sure. Those three letters.
Yeah.
So the point is that people are terrified of MSG or really can't stand it. They say maybe it gives them all sorts of physical maladies. Perhaps they think it can lead to developmental disorders. And yet at the same time, they consume MSG every day without realizing it and without being affected by it. So it's entirely possible. Like you said, we'll talk about this much more in depth later, that the fear of MSG is a totally unfounded scientific panic that is a basically a nocebo reaction
mm-hmm.
to something that appears to be basically harmless to almost everybody who consumes it.
Yeah, so we're going to be busting some myths left and right.
Yeah, we are.
Like,
who, I call Adam.
Did you say I call Adam?
Yeah, I call Adam. You're Jamie this time.
Oh, nuts. Let me get my beret
Jamie.
Out.
Yeah. You got to shave your beard, too. Just keep the mustache.
Yeah, and I got to grow that mustache out to where it covers both lips.
That's right.
He had that big thing. Boy, he disappeared, didn't he?
It's enormous. Oh, yeah. He said, thanks for the memories, suckers.
Yeah, I always was under the impression, just watching that show and being a fan, that he didn't want to be there ever.
Right. I think he liked the science of it. He wasn't into the TV part of it.
I think so. I think his last day on set, he was probably pretty stoked to get out of there.
Right. He was like Jerry at the end of Stuff You Should Know when it comes.
Yeah, except he had millions of dollars tucked into his arm garter.
Exactly.
All right, so monosodium glutamate there's a lot of myths. One of them is that, you know, this is something that human beings just created out of thin air. It's black
right.
magic.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not true because it occurs naturally in a lot of foods. If you've ever had tomatoes and cheese,
yep.
those are a couple of big ones. You eat a pizza, you're eating naturally occurring MSG.
Yeah, don't forget again, oysters, anchovies, mushrooms, potatoes. If you like Asian food, kelp, seaweed,
sure.
all that stuff contains natural MSG or some form of glutamates.
Yeah, and such that The FDA, like, if you get a can of tomato sauce, if you haven't added MSG otherwise, you don't have to put that on the label because it's in the tomato.
Right. But apparently in the United States, you also can't put something like no added MSG or no MSG on the label because it's been proven as misleading. So sure. You just don't mention MSG at all, even though there is MSG in that tomato sauce. But like you said, if the manufacturer says, these tomatoes have a decent amount of MSG, but we really want to pep it up a little bit with some added MSG, then they definitely have to put that MSG is in there.
That's right. So if you want to talk chemistry very briefly, mm-hmm. which is always the best way to talk about chemistry, it is monosodium glutamate. Is glutamic or glutamic acid? What do you say?
Glutamic.
Glutamic?
Yeah.
And a little ion of sodium, just boop, right there on top.
Right. And so that's it. That's monosodium glutamate. And so the difference between glutamic acid, which is an amino acid that our bodies produce, we're able to synthesize it by breaking down proteins. Mm-hmm. It's actually a glutamic acid and any kind of mineral ion bonded together is a glutamate. So if glutamic acid is bonded with an ion of sodium, it's monosodium glutamate. If it's bonded with an ion of potassium, it's potassium glutamate. So there's like different minerals that it can bond to, but the one we're talking about is monosodium glutamate. And glutamate is extremely important to our bodies. I saw somewhere that 4 pounds of us, a little under 2 kilograms, of any human being walking around is glutamate. That's how much of it we have in our bodies at any given point in time.
Yeah, and it actually serves functions too. Glutamic acid is a neurotransmitter.
Right.
And it's an excitatory neurotransmitter, which that means it stimulates nerve cells to relay the signal. And we'll get to the is it good or bad thing, but some people, one of the claims and sort of where some of that is rooted, aside from just propaganda, is that MSG in foods can lead to excessive glutamate in the brain mm-hmm. and then excessive stimulation of nerve cells. And for that reason, it's what's called an excitotoxin.
Right. Like it excites neurons so much that it actually destroys or damages them. So you destroy enough neurons, then you destroy your cognitive function.
That's right. And we'll hold the rest of that to the for further myth busting.
Yeah.
Myth busting.
I like the extra mustard you put on it.
So as far as how much we're consuming, this is what the FDA says. And this is a quote. An average adult consumes approximately 13 grams of glutamate each day from mm-hmm. the protein in food. And then this is just like regular foods.
Right.
While intake of added MSG is estimated to be around 0.55 grams per day.
Right.
So average daily intake is about a half a gram a day.
Right. And so you can find it, again, everywhere in the body. You also find it in breast milk.
Sure.
And glutamates are just everywhere. And so even if you wanted to get away from MSG, you're not really getting away from glutamates, and it would be you'd be ill-advised to get away from glutamates to begin with, right?
Right.
The thing is, and this is where a lot of people say, well, really, MSG is fine. There's no problems with it. A lot of people say that. That's kind of considered a settled science by some, as we'll see, that the body does not distinguish between manufactured MSG and the MSG or other kinds of glutamates that it gets from foods in which this naturally occurs, right?
That's right.
When your body takes in MSG, it goes, okay, let's separate the sodium ion and send it over here for this use, and we'll break the glutamate down over here, and we'll use it for this, for neurotransmitting and to build proteins. It doesn't make any distinction, metabolically speaking, between MSG that's manufactured and MSG that you find in like tomatoes.
Right. I think part of the problem started in the 60s with the way it was synthesized.
Yeah.
Anytime something is synthesized through a chemical process that has, you know, toxins and toxic byproducts, I think people are going to freak out, even if the end result is not toxic.
Yeah, and it's pretty understandable, too, because, I mean, some of the stuff we're talking about is very nasty, and you think about it, you're like, wait, that's where MSG comes from, and I'm eating it on my food?
Right.
I can commiserate with that big time, even though a large part of my brain is like, that's just kind of a fear of science and chemistry.
Right.
But it's understandable. I mean, like, in the for the first half of the 20th century, there was a process to produce MSG that included propylene and acrylonitrile, which you don't want to eat that, and you don't eat it. It's just these were used to as precursors to create MSG. That's how, right. That's the process for a while. But you can understand how it would get a bad rep just from that alone.
Yeah, but now it's produced by fermentation. Mm-hmm. Basically, they take certain kinds of bacteria and yeast, and they grow that in a broth. They basically use starches, various sugars, carbohydrates, and then the bacteria ferments that sugar.
Yeah.
And they produce the glutamate. Then they combine it with the sodium, and it becomes, it looks sort of like salt. It's a white crystalline substance. It doesn't really have much of an odor. Mm-hmm. And you could just sprinkle it on top of your chocolate ice cream if you wanted.
You could. I think it actually does in certain amounts bring out sweet. I don't think it does anything to sour or bitter, but it can enhance sweetness and enhance saltiness. It does have its own flavor, which we'll see, but it's also known as a flavor enhancer, too.
Right, like that accent.
Right, exactly. Accent.
Why aren't they sponsoring this episode?
I don't know. They really should. Either that or they're like, leave us out of this. We don't want to get this kind of rap.
They're like, we were under the radar for a large portion of the 20th century.
Right, exactly. Until you guys came along.
Should we take a break?
Oh, wait, hold on. I have a little more on fermentation.
All right, of course.
This is very surprising, but the fermentation, the wastewater, what's left over after you get the MSG out of this like sugar beet juice that the bacteria and yeast have fermented. I read a study from the Chinese National Academy of Science, I believe, Chinese Academy of Science. They called MSG wastewater one of the most intractable forms of wastewater we produce.
Ew.
Yeah, because all of that yeast and some of the ammonium that's produced as a byproduct of it, it consumes a lot of oxygen, so it kills off other stuff in, like, water. So you can't just dump this wastewater into other water because it'll create, like, a dead zone wherever it hits.
That doesn't bode well for people that, you know, are scared of it.
No, it doesn't. There's a lot of stuff about MSG where if you look at it, you're like, yeah, I really understand. It's really coincidental that this is actually harmless, but there's all this, like, circumstantial peripheral stuff that seems
the wastewater will scorch the earth.
Basically, yeah. But enjoy your accent, chump. Poor accent.
I know.
All right, now I'm okay with taking a break.
All right, we'll come back and talk a little bit of a refresher, perhaps, on umami right after this.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
So, Chuck, we did an entire episode on umami. Do you remember that?
That was a good one.
It was. We also talked about it in our episode on taste and how it works.
Sure.
But we should kind of go over the broad strokes of it again, I think.
Yeah. I mean, up until the early 1900s, humans were sort of, since 400 BCE when bitter was added by a philosopher of all people named Democritus.
Is there anything,
Democritus.
Anything those philosophers couldn't do?
I don't think so. It's a pretty broad title back then.
For real.
But sweet, salty, sour, and bitter. And we were locked into that, and everyone was pretty happy with that. Like, why mess with it? You know?
I don't know. They're still messing with it today. There's,
oh, sure.
I've seen like 6-7 other candidates for a sixth taste.
I'm sure that will be happening at some point in the near future, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think we settled last time on carbon dioxide is going to be the sixth taste. Really?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's sad.
No, it's a good one. It does some some magic to your tongue.
I guess it does, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we'll see. So here's a gentleman that comes along in 1909, and his name is Kakune Akita. Is that right?
Not bad.
What did I get wrong?
There's like an extra little half syllable in there. Kikune. Like,
oh, okay. Well, I should just leave the Japanese pronunciations to you.
I think you basically knew. I should have just kept my mouth shut because it was so close that
I've got Europe locked down.
Here you go.
How selfish can I be?
Right, exactly. Do Kikunae Akita in an Italian accent.
I don't think I can.
Yes, you can.
My brain just broke. So he was a professor of chemistry at Tokyo Imperial University, and he was eating some dashi, which is made from seaweed, a kelp called kombu. And he was like, man, this tastes meaty, but there's no meat in it, and it's super rich, and there's something going on in here that I don't that I can't quite pinpoint, and I think I might be onto something.
He said, where's the beef?
He might have.
He totally did. So this is not like the first time anyone ever realized, like, yeah, there's such a thing as a meaty taste or whatever. But because we have been so locked into the idea that there's only four tastes. I mean, I remember going to elementary school and being taught that too.
Sure.
In the 80s, basically, just lied to over and over again.
Yeah. No one said umami to me until like 7 years ago.
Basically, yeah. But Ikeda had figured this out way back in 1908. He said, no, this is not just some flavor. This is a taste sensation that is not one of the other four. It's its own thing. And even more than that, I've been doing some pretty neat experiments on kombu and dashi, and I've actually isolated what's giving this thing its meaty taste. And by the way, I'm going to call meaty taste umami, which means delicious or yummy.
Yeah.
And it's called monosodium glutamate.
That's right. And this was not, we knew about glutamic acid.
Which way do you say? Do you prefer glutamic?
I mean, my mouth wants to say glutamic, but my heart wants to say glutamic.
I gotcha.
So I'm torn between two lovers.
You are. Just call it G acid.
Yeah, G acid. We knew about this stuff already. There was a German chemist named Karl Heinrich Rithausen.
Beautiful.
And he discovered this in 1866. So that brings us to another myth we can bust here, is that gluten, like because it's monosodium glutamate, people that have gluten intolerance think that it's made with wheat gluten and that they can't eat it. And that's not true at all.
No. Had you heard that before?
I've heard, I think anything with the letters GLU in any food, I think people that have gluten sensitivity are wary of.
Right. Well, what's interesting about this, I hadn't heard that, but this makes total sense. The reason that it's even called glutamic acid is because Rittenhausen used wheat gluten he hydrolyzed it, basically broke it down like the acids in your stomach break down food.
Right.
To isolate the glutamic acid. Since he used wheat gluten, he just kind of named the acid after what he used as the precursor, which was wheat gluten, but it has no gluten in it, has nothing to do with gluten. You can get MSG any number of ways that don't involve wheat.
Did I ever tell you about the restaurant in Paris, the gluten-free place Emily and I went to?
No.
You know what the name of it was?
What?
No glue.
Nice.
I'm serious.
That's pretty great. That's great.
Yeah, right in the middle of Paris. And it was actually really good. I had a very, very delicious hamburger there.
I can imagine, man. French cooking is mwah.
Yeah, even without gluten.
And speaking of French cooking, there is a guy who was using savory. That's what people in the West called it, even after Ikeda came along and said, no, this is umami, it's its own thing. The Western chefs were well aware of this idea of savory. They just hadn't said this is a fifth taste that humans are capable of tasting. And Auguste Escoffier, who I had heard the name of before, but I didn't realize, he's the guy who basically founded French classical cuisine as we understand it today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was this guy.
He invented the sauce?
No, he invented, like, French cooking.
That was a joke. French cooking is all about the sauces.
It is about the sauce. So, yes, I'm sure he had a lot to do with the sauce. But I was reading an article on him in Britannica, and it was written by Nathan Myhrvold, who was the first CTO of Microsoft. But it was about this French cook from the 19th century.
Yeah, he was big into animal stocks,
mm-hmm.
and he used veal stock and kitten stock.
Right.
And puppy stock.
Sure.
Puppy and all stock sorts of baby delicious. Animal stocks.
Right.
And he knew about it. You know, we just didn't call it umami until it was so named.
No, and also one other thing about Escoffier, he also used something called Maggi sauce, which had been invented several years before by Julius Maggi, who was a Swiss miller, who came up with this sauce. And Escoffier was like, this is the bomb, I think was the quote that he said. So people were aware of savory, so much so that they were creating sauces that really isolated the umami flavor. It just, again, was Ikeda who came along and said, let's apply some science here. I give you, ladies and gentlemen, the fifth taste.
That's right. And it does taste, you know, there's a writer named Carla Lali Musique.
Nice.
It's music, but I bet she pronounces it Musique.
I would if my last name was Music.
And she writes sometimes for Bon Appetit. And she said it's sort of like salt mixed with dehydrated meat juice. And it adds a lot to food. You don't want too much of it. You can sprinkle it on your food, but you don't really want, like, you can buy pure MSG, but it's not the kind of thing that people generally do,
mm-hmm.
like at home, is buy a big tub of MSG
right.
and, like, sprinkle it on stuff. It's usually mixed with other spices, like accent.
Accent. It can be mixed with other seasonings, salt. It gets mixed with most often. And the reason that you want to pre-mix it is because, one, I mean, it's just easier to use. But there's certain proportions you want to use. It doesn't take much MSG
no.
to bring out the flavor in salt, or for MSG to kind of even stand on its own and lend that umami flavor to whatever you're doing. So you don't want to use too much. So you'd have to be pretty proficient in, you know, using MSG to just use straight up MSG.
Right.
Which is why it's usually pre-mixed to begin with.
Yeah. So Ikeda, for his, you know, he was a smart guy. So he wasn't just satisfied with discovering this and sort of sitting back and said, one day on Wikipedia, I will be featured.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm going to make some money off of this. And he got a business partner named, you should say all Japanese names.
Okay. Saburo Suzuki Jr.
Yeah, so you do it with the right flair.
I've been exposed to it so much, I kind of, yeah.
I like it. I sound like an American, and you sound like you're trying to fit in.
Thank you.
So this guy was already a part of the chemical industry, and so it was a pretty natural relationship. They founded a company called?
Ajinomoto.
The Essence of Taste. And their mascot was and is?
Well, that's just, okay, the Aji Panda.
I could have said that.
But you could have said that.
But they are still around today, and a couple of years ago, they had about $10 billion worth of sales of MSG. They're the largest producer, and they are literally pumping this stuff out on a year-to-year basis.
Yeah, funny enough, I don't have a bottle of Accent in my pantry, but I do have a bottle of Ajinomoto.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, some listener's going to write and be like, why do you hate America?
I bet Accent is not even made in America.
I wonder. Sometimes they do kind of slip it by, like it's just been around for so long, everybody thinks like, well, that's, of course it's America.
Yeah, who knows?
Like they chant USA when they grab the bottle and sprinkle it on their food.
So we should talk a little bit about the science of whether or not MSG, you know, is it all in people's head? Is it real?
I'm really glad you asked that, Chuck. I don't know.
Well, I mean, here's the deal. The FDA says I remember, did we do one on the FDA?
Yes. Okay. Does the FDA protect Americans?
That's right, because that's where we, I remember this phrase, generally recognized as safe, GRAS.
I think that also came up in our dietary supplements episode, too.
Yeah, it's funny that a phrase meaning something is safe does not make one feel any better.
Right, generally.
Generally recognized as safe does not mean 100% safe. And it doesn't mean 100% safe because even though it's fairly settled science, they can't say, like, absolutely no way in any case is MSG ever harmful at all to anyone in any amount.
Yeah, but I mean, you can say that about basically anything. And I'm not trying to create a straw man argument.
No,
here,
I'm with you.
You can say that about water. There was a woman who drank too much water and died of water toxicity. You can die from too much salt. And remember, it doesn't take much MSG as compared to salt to be added to food to really, you know, bring out the flavor or whatever. So there's like a lot of, well, you can basically, there's nothing you could say, this is never going to harm you no matter how much you eat. And I think that's kind of why they're saying generally recognized as safe. I think the other aspect of it, though, is that a lot of people do want to say, no, this is just, it's settled. I've seen that all over the place while we were researching. This is settled science. I read about a woman who wrote a book exploring whether or not, you know, some food additives were safe. And she didn't even bother to include MSG in the book because she considered it so settled. But there is definitely a contingency of people out there, including not just like worried parents or Facebook dwellers, like actual scientists in like the industry of food sciences who are saying, no, actually there may be a small group of people out there who experience these symptoms that we now call MSG symptom complex, but what used to be called Chinese restaurant syndrome. But that overall, like, it's not going to developmentally harm your kid, or it's not going to blow your brain up because it's an excitotoxin or anything like that.
Yeah, so here's the deal on the science. It is true that increased glutamate activity can cause harm, and that large doses of MSG can raise the blood levels of glutamate, but dietary glutamate, like, and we'll talk about some of the experiments here in a second, but dietary glutamate is not going to have any effect on your brain because it can't cross the blood-brain barrier in large amounts. So they
did. Is that true?
Huh?
That's right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
So here's the deal. If people experience like headache, muscle tightness, numbness, tingling, weakness, flushing, these are all reported like symptoms of that syndrome. We're talking about dietary glutamate. Like, they say the threshold that could cause those symptoms is about 3 grams in a single meal. Mm-hmm. But if you remember, we said 0.5 grams is a daily average intake.
Right.
So in a single meal, consuming 6 times the average daily intake of MSG could lead to something like that. And they're not exactly sure why, but some researchers, they have speculated that really large doses like that, like overdosing on MSG, you may get little trace amounts crossing the blood-brain barrier.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And that 3 grams in a single meal is straight up MSG fed to people in an experiment who were on an empty stomach. So, like, there's basically no situation where you're going to accidentally poison yourself with MSG so that you would actually get that MSG symptom complex.
Right. And in the early 70s, when this stuff started really becoming like, you know, the devil's spice, they were literally injecting baby monkeys and mice with straight MSG.
And humans.
And they didn't like it very much.
No.
Because they were injecting large amounts of MSG into infant animals.
Right. So I read that there are pharmacological effects from injecting MSG. Like, that's basically not up for debate. And I was like, well, sure, if you inject sugar or even if you inject salt or something like that, you'd be same problems. Actually, it's not necessarily true. You get kind of saline drips. You get glucose drips. They're, like, people do inject salt and sugar and can tolerate it. So in injected form, MSG is not good for you. But no one injects MSG. And the fact that we metabolize MSG by eating it, and that that's how we actually intake MSG in small amounts through food, which our guts then metabolize and turn into glutamate and sodium, that it should not be harmful for you. That's what the science has found.
That's right. And in addition to these studies that injected baby mice, which is sort of ridiculous, these weren't even great studies anyway. They were not double blind. Ed found research that says, you know, they were just basically lacking in design altogether.
Right.
So they weren't good studies, and they were wacky in how they, the methodology, I think.
Well, yeah, which is kind of, I don't know, I guess it's surprising. I maybe just scientists who weren't so great were the ones who tended to be interested in it, or they were rushing it out to market. I'm not sure.
Or maybe food science was just a little early.
Maybe so. But from the findings of these early studies and then replicated studies of the early studies that found MSG to be harmful basically said, no, this is not harmful. Yeah, probably if you inject it, it's not good, but don't inject it is basically what science said. And then there were further follow-up studies, you know, in the decades that followed that said, okay, well, wait a minute. What about all these people who are self-reporting MSG allergies, who are saying they're getting this complex of symptoms from eating at, like, Chinese restaurants or something? And so there was investigation of that. And what they found from those studies is that they basically couldn't get it beyond the placebo effect.
Right.
That you were just as likely, if not in some cases, more likely to report the MSG symptoms complex from a placebo than you were if you were given actual MSG, a pill with MSG or something in it. So combined, all these studies combined have basically led the FDA to say, because the symptoms can't be consistently or reliably replicated, and that there's all these double-blind placebo tests that have been done that show placebo can bring it out too, we tend to think that it's actually basically in almost everyone's heads.
That's right. Should we take another break?
Sure.
All right. We'll take one final break, and we're going to come back and talk about a few reasons why the MSG scare was born right after this.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
So, Chuck, just despite the fact that, like, there's all this science out there that some people are like, this is settled science. Like, that is not a phrase that even really has any basis in reality. But that's what they're kind of the point with people who say it's settled science. They're saying, like, this is as close as science comes. Like, stop being afraid of MSG. There's still plenty of people who don't eat MSG, who avoid it.
Yeah.
I saw that the International Food Information Council did a survey and found that 42% of Americans actively avoid MSG.
Yeah.
Like they read labels, and if the thing says MSG is contained in this, they won't eat it, which is more than people who avoid caffeine, genetically modified organisms, or gluten, which was really surprising to me.
And when was that?
That was, oh man, you're killing me. It wasn't very long ago. How about that?
Well, it's been since the gluten scare has happened?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I would guess so. So I would say within the last 10 years that, gotcha, that poll was done. But so there are people who are like, I don't trust you. I don't trust the FDA. I don't like the word that says generally. It scares me that sometimes MSG is used as a preservative and stabilizer in vaccines. I don't like those two being associated with one another. Other people say, and I saw this, but I couldn't see it. I saw the same mention basically around the internet, and I couldn't find any source material, so take this with a grain of salt, as it were. But that MSG, the fermentation of MSG produces arsenic and lead.
Yeah, I saw that too.
So people aren't real excited about that kind of thing. And then there's that whole other subsection of people who are like, it's an excitotoxin, and if you eat too much of this, your brain's going to blow up. It's basically like a genuine flavor blast is what they're saying.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of people who are afraid of MSG. But the question is, you know, is it because MSG really is harmful, or is it because it's, you know, just a fear of science and a distrust of the people who are supposedly looking out for our well-being?
Well, and a holdover from the 1970s and 80s.
Right.
When it was, you know, it was all over the place as something terrible, to the extent where restaurants and hotels, and a lot of them still do have these signs that say no MSG, mm-hmm, like it's safe to eat here.
Right.
There was a book written by a man named Russell Blaylock called Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. and there were rumors, Chinese restaurants put it in their food because you get filled up faster and you won't eat as much off the buffet.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, you don't remember hearing that?
No.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Is it
fills you up and so, or makes, yeah, you feel full? So, you know, you're going to get away with 13 cents less food.
Right. I've actually seen that there is an idea that MSG does affect you in that way. It makes you feel fuller. But from what I'm seeing, science is bearing out the opposite, that they think that people who eat MSG tend to be heavier than people who don't use MSG.
Yeah.
Because it may suppress leptin, which is a hormone that tells us that we're full, so we stop eating. So the idea is the more MSG you eat, the less you're going to feel full, or you're just not going to feel full and you're going to keep eating more, which is a problem because from what I'm seeing, you know, the whole like anti-sodium thing that's kind of going on among health crusaders?
Sure.
Well, in very much the same way that corn syrup was allowed to replace fats in that whole fat-free trend, MSG is being added in increasing amounts to this low sodium or even salt-free stuff because it brings out the flavor in salt. So if you add more MSG, you can use less salt. And on the package, you can say lower sodium.
Right.
You don't say anything about the MSG, but you can sell this thing as lower sodium or whatever. So people who are worried about their heart or worried about their salt intake will buy that, not knowing that they're eating actually more MSG than they would be. And that may actually cause them to overeat if indeed MSG is linked to obesity. And the jury's still out on that one as well.
Yes, very much inconclusive at this point.
Yes.
So a lot of this is where the story gets kind of interesting, I think, as far as the hysteria around MSG. And there was a letter written to the New England Journal of Medicine in 1968, mm-hmm, from Dr. Ho Man Kwok, K-W-O-K. And he was a senior research investigator at a place called the National Biomedical Research Foundation. He immigrated from China, mm-hmm, and he said, you know what? After I eat at Chinese restaurants here in the United States, Chinese American food, I feel malaise. I feel some of these symptoms that people always list out, mm-hmm, these adverse reactions. And I think, I'm speculating here, that it's because they're using a lot of MSG over here.
Right, which I think the implication was they don't really use MSG in China because they're better chefs. Like good, really right. good chefs kind of look down their nose at using MSG because it's a cheat. You can bring MSG out. You can bring glutamates out in food through like patient, slow and low cooking techniques. Or you can just take a shortcut and put a little MSG on it.
Right.
And you're going to get to basically the same place, right?
That's right.
So in one way, you almost have the idea that he was saying like Chinese food in China is superior to Chinese food in America. But he was saying—
Which I'm sure is true.
Probably. But he was saying like— I actually feel physically unwell after I eat in Chinese restaurants in America.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a big difference than Chinese food in China is better than Chinese food in America.
Right. And this was not, you know, a letter to the editor. This was published in the New England Journal of Medicine.
Right. By a doctor.
Yeah. So it was a big deal.
Right.
And here's what happened after that. This letter... Like, it was a sort of a domino effect. And even though he was a Chinese-American and he had probably the best of intentions, it gets picked up. And then all of a sudden, there are white people in America writing racist articles with, like, broken English headlines,
mm-hmm.
Very much like making a caricature out of Chinese people, Chinese food, Chinese immigrants, Chinese chefs.
Mm-hmm.
And it devolved into jokes. And, like, this is the era that we grew up in the 70s and 80s, where, like, we remember this stuff.
Sure. In very short order, Dr. Kwok didn't coin this, but some of the letters, the follow-up letters in response that the New England Journal of Medicine started to print, coined this term Chinese restaurant syndrome.
That's right.
Where basically, if you ate at a Chinese restaurant in America, because of the copious amounts of MSG that was used, you could feel weak, lightheaded, your neck and face could feel tight or flushed or both. You might feel woozy. You might have heart palpitations, any number of things, headaches, allergies might get set off, your asthma might get set off. And all of these things combined came to be called Chinese restaurant syndrome. And here's the thing. You said it. Dr. Kwok's letter was a letter. It wasn't a study. He didn't say, hey, here's a study. Let's peer review it.
Right.
It was a letter that got some response, pretty much tongue-in-cheek joking responses in the New England Journal of Medicine. And the non-medical media saw this and said, oh, let's start reporting on this, and started reporting on it as if it were scientific fact that MSG caused these symptoms and that you would get this from eating at Chinese restaurants.
That's right. So none of it had to do with eating 8 pounds of Chinese food at a buffet.
Sure. Sure. And even Dr. Kwok in his letter said maybe it's soy sauce, maybe it's cooking wine, maybe it's...
Right.
I can't remember. I think the copious amounts of sodium. And people even still today say, hey, maybe Chinese food does do something to you, but is it possible it's one of the spices or herbs or plants that's used extensively in Chinese cuisine? Who knows?
Yeah. And it, you know, it can be salty food, especially when you're dumping soy sauce on top of already salty food.
Sure. But the point is, it's not clear at all that there is such a thing as Chinese restaurant syndrome, that there is any kind of response that anyone actually gets to this, or is it all just the power of suggestion?
That's right. And the story gets a little weirder here as far as this letter goes.
Mm-hmm.
So they published a letter, New England Journal of Medicine, and apparently there's a history there of like joke letters, like onion-style stuff, I guess.
Sure.
Fake syndromes, silly letters.
Christ a lot returns of, to the NBA.
A lot of letters in response to this Kwok letter mm-hmm. had this, sort of took this angle where they were doing that. And some of them suggested that it was a fake letter and the name Ho Man Kwok was a pun, human crock. And it was all just cooked up.
Right.
So that's the foundation. Then in 2018... Dr. Howard Steele
this guy
put a response to an article about this controversy, and he called a reporter and said, you know what, I wrote that letter way back then. He said, I was trying to win a bet to see if I could get a fake letter in the New England Journal of Medicine.
So that became the story for a while, that this one letter that had kicked off this potentially totally unfounded fear of MSG and Chinese food restaurants was not only like baseless, but it had been written as a prank by a white doctor who made up a funny sounding Chinese name and that he had basically pranked everyone in America for the last several decades.
Right.
That's how it stood for a little while. But it turns out that even that wasn't correct. And we have our friends over at This American Life, our friends/rivals over at This American Life, to thank for exposing this Howard Steele dude, because they dug in a little further.
Yeah. Who are you going to turn to? The Podfather.
Yeah.
Mr. Glass, Dr. Ira Glass.
The Podfather. I thought that was Marin.
No, I always called Ira Glass the Podfather.
Really?
Yeah.
I always thought you were referring to Marin every time.
No.
That makes a lot more sense.
Marin's not the Podfather.
Isn't Adam Curry the Podfather?
Well, I think technically, probably.
Is that an urban legend?
That he was the first podcaster?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's got to be true, right?
I don't know. It sounds great. So yes, of course it has to be true.
I mean, Jesse Thorne was around before Marin.
Sure. Well, we were around before Marin.
Were we? Barely? Mm-hmm.
Just barely. He'll never live it down.
So in this was this year, in 2019, as we record this, mm-hmm. This American Life poked around, like they like to do. Mm-hmm. They found out that Dr. Steele, who was dead at this time, was kind of a real jerk, because Dr. Kwok was a real person who is now also dead. And his children are not too happy about all this. They confirmed, like, no, my dad was Dr. Kwok. That is his real name.
Yeah, it's not a joke name.
No, he wrote this letter. He did work. There is a really a place called the National Biomedical Research Foundation, because I guess Steele said that wasn't even a real thing, right?
He said he made up the whole thing.
All of it.
Yes.
And this daughter was sort of exasperated and was like, no, that was my dad. He worked there. He wrote that letter. And this Dr. Steele sort of, like, what's his problem?
Basically, his daughter explains on This American Life that her dad was the kind of guy who would just play a prank like this, and when he was finally found out, would just refuse to apologize because you should have had your head on straight better and shouldn't have fallen
for it.
He was that kind of guy. And on the one hand, I mean, he was an important physician. He apparently invented some orthopedic surgical techniques that are still used today. But he was also kind of a jerk from what I can tell.
He's the kind of guy that pulls out the chair from under you and you fall on the floor and he's like, what, you don't reach back to see if your chair's there?
Basically, that's kind of how his daughter portrayed him in a certain way. Lovingly, because it's her dad.
Sure.
But you should, you know, did you hear that segment?
Episode?
So, yeah, it's real cringe-inducing to hear Lily Sullivan on This American Life break the news to Dr. Steele's daughter that, like, he didn't make up that letter, that he was lying about that all these years.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, God.
Oh, Dad.
What has he done now? So the upshot of all of this is that there was, like, Steele really confounds everything. But if you take Steele out of the equation, what you're left with is a Chinese-American doctor, I think a pediatrician, who wrote a letter back in 1968, from what I can tell, very earnestly and with good intentions, saying, hey, don't you think this is weird? What is this kind of thing? Here's what happens to me when I eat Chinese food in America. Here's what I think it is. That just set off this uncritical and kind of pretty racist examination of it that the whole country just kind of took on as fact for decades.
That's right.
And your beloved accent, Chuck?
Yeah.
How does that play into this?
Well, I mean, I don't use it.
But it had been around for a good 20 years before Dr. Kwok's letter was published, right?
Oh, sure. Americans been using that stuff for ages.
Right. And no one had ever complained of any symptoms from MSG. It wasn't until that one single letter.
That's right.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
What an odd story. You got anything else?
No.
Okay. Well, if you want to know more about MSG, go try Maggi or Kombu or what was it? Oysters?
Sure. Tomatoes, cheese, accent. Yeah.
Go try all that stuff. You're going to love it. And since I said that, it's time for listener mail.
Well, you got a listener mail follow-up, don't you?
I do. I have two things, Chuck. First, I want to give a little heads up to everybody. My Chicago End of the World show is coming up on September 12th, and there are tickets still available. I'll be at Lincoln Hall, and you can get tickets at lh-st.com. Don't be a jerk and spell out dash. It's just the dash symbol. And then, yes, I have an update for a listener mail. Do you remember the listener mail author, Kate, who wrote in at the end of the nuclear semiotics episode?
Sure.
She had said that she had undergone like a breakup and drove from Phoenix to Charlotte and listened to us the whole time. Well, when we read that, almost immediately, we got an email from another listener named Jeremy, who lives in Charlotte, who said, "Sorry to hear about your breakup, but welcome to Charlotte," from another SYSK listener.
Are they in love?
It's a great, I don't know about that. It's a great city, and I hope you have a new start, a great new start here, which I just thought was so nice.
Sure.
That I found Kate's original email and got in touch with her and just forwarded just that part. Copied and pasted it. I didn't forward Jeremy's whole email because, you know.
You're not playing matchmaker. Boundaries. You're just being friendly.
No, and I'm glad I'm not trying to play matchmaker because in response, I get an update from Kate. And she says, "Thank you. I'm doing so well now. I made a new group of friends. I have my own apartment, a new teaching job, and I'm even dating someone new. It ended up being the best decision I've ever made." She said, "Thank you for sharing my listener mail. You guys rock." And then the metal finger hand emoji.
Is she dating the guy?
I don't think so. That would have been really fast.
That's a MacGuffin then.
Right. But you're the one who introduced it. I never said that. The guy was just being nice.
I think it clearly was headed toward a romantic ending, no?
Oh, sorry. I didn't realize.
I've seen too many movies, I guess.
I think you have too. You're like, come on, you got mail.
All right. Well, I'm glad everyone's happy. It doesn't have to end like a Meg Ryan movie.
No, it doesn't. But it sounds like it came pretty close, actually.
All right. I love it.
So way to go, Kate, in making a bold decision that paid off.
So now listener mail. Or should we? Or does that count? Should we just end?
I don't know, man. It's up to you. How good's the listener mail you have?
It's pretty good. Let's go ahead and read it.
Okay.
This is from Veronica. She said, "Hey, guys, beyond the content of your show that I love, I hold a special place in my heart for the community your show has fostered that I experienced at your Chicago show this summer," which was nice. Just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
I attended that show during, and by the way, she started listening to this show when she was in the sixth grade.
No.
And now she's like a working adult.
That's cool.
Yes, it's the best. I attended the show in a very particularly difficult week. My childhood dog of 17 years had passed away that day.
No.
I had just moved across the country for a job with a lot of new responsibilities and challenges, and I was trying to establish some new routines in a big city where I knew no one. I was sitting in the third to last row of that theater with anxiety heavy in my heart, and then seeing both of you guys for the first time and hearing your voices made me feel like everything was going to be okay.
No.
It's hard to put into words how tangible the happiness in that theater was. And people, if you don't go to these live shows, there's tangible happiness.
There is.
You know?
Yeah, we have not paid this listener to say this or give this testimonial.
Yeah, come for stuff you should know. Stay for the tangible happiness.
Right. You can squish it through your fingers like jelly.
She said, "I've never been to any sort of event with such a joyful crowd."
This is amazing.
And she capitalized joyful. At the end of the show, Chuck talked about his late dog, Buckley. I remember the last question of the night was this cute little girl who said, "Which dog who is dead do you miss the most?" She said it nicer than that. But I said Buckley. And she said that brought me to tears in the theater, not only because this was the same name as my own dearly departed dog.
What?
Who died that day.
This has just descended into like joyful chaos.
I know, right?
I can barely hang on.
Man, she said also it felt like such a weird coincidence of this universe and I couldn't explain it. Having recently graduated college, I'm starting my first job as a teacher in the fall, and I attribute a large part of my desire to go into education to you guys. Thanks for instilling me a love of learning, pursuing intellectual curiosities, and sharing those curiosities and joys along the way with others. And she shouts out some friends, Caroline VZ in Philadelphia, Joanne L. in Ava Maria, Florida. They are two fellow Stuff You Should Know enthusiasts, and her name is Veronica, newly transplanted to Chicago from California.
Well, welcome to Chicago, Veronica.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about Buckley, but I'm glad that you could help grieve that loss with, 1,400 friends.
Joyful friends.
That's right.
Man, that was amazing. Thanks a lot for that letter, Veronica. That was great. If you want to get in touch with us like Veronica did or Kate or Jeremy, you can go on to stuffyoushouldknow.com and check out our social links, or you can send us a good old-fashioned email. Wrap it up, spank that puppy on the bottom, and send it off to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. That's right.